Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is January 17th, 2020, 1:56 p.m. I'm sitting here with Joel Alvarado and Jason Anavitarte. And my name is Christopher Perlera. This first recording of Los Políticos, or Los Politicos, will be for our listening party, our friends, leaders in the community, and peers that we represent them as individuals who are Latin American, Hispanic, in the community, very proud of the work you all are doing. And we live on the front lines of politics in one way or another.
So thank you, Chris, for that introduction. I'm just glad to be able to sit down and have a conversation with my friends. I've been doing this for a while now, just talking shop with people I know. And it's good to know that I'll be able to, on a regular basis, have a conversation with two people I consider real good friends of mine, Chris and Jason, to talk about politics. And we don't always see eye to eye in politics, but we all agree that Latinos need to be engaged in the conversation. We need to be at the table. We need for people to not talk about us, but talk with us about the issues of the day. And more important, what I want to let people know is that we are all proud to be Latino, but we're also proud to be Georgians. We're proud to be Americans, and we're proud to be Southerners. True. We believe we add all of that to the conversation.
So, Joel, I just want to add, it's just awesome to be here today with you guys, have this conversation and just talk about just, quite frankly, the difference of views that Latinos have in Georgia and across the South, that we're all not just concerned about maybe immigration. We're not just all concerned about just basic issues that people deal with on a daily basis, and hopefully through our different viewpoints and our backgrounds and our experiences, we're able to share a message with everyone to learn about, you know, what's going on in politics every single day in Georgia.
Let me jump on in real quick. Jason, why do you think a podcast like Los Políticos is important? Did I say that like English and Spanglish? It's like almost like it's like,
I'm not sure, but I think for the people that are going to be listening to this first one, they know who we are, right? But I think it's important that we, even for our friends that don't know everything about us, Jason, if you'll kick us off, like, who are you? Why? What kind of Latino, what kind of Hispanic are you? Yeah. And what are your bona fides? Why should people listen to you?
So
yeah. Who are you, Jason?
I'm someone that's born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. Conservative. My background is Puerto Rican. My father is from Ponce, Puerto Rico, moved here after living in Puerto Rico for many years. And
keep going. What else you got? You're Puerto Rican, and so we know you're Hispanic.
Right.
We'll vouch for you. We'll vouch for you.
Right. I appreciate that.
You've been a member of the community. You've come out. You support. I think those that know you, know you're engaged and you're invested.
So lived here my whole life. Twice now, have served as a elected official. I'm currently an elected official in a very red, strong Republican county in Paulding County, Georgia. School board member, city council in Doraville several years ago.
Mayor pro tem.
Decade ago, yeah, youngest. And I think there's one of the things that I believe in terms of as a Latino is just how do we take the issues that someone like me works on every single day and understand that Latino families need to be involved, be engaged, and be hands-on in terms of dictating the terms of what policymakers how they're impacting their lives every day.
Chris, get on this, man.
All right. So Christopher Perlera, if you like to roll your R's, or if you don't speak any Spanish, it's Perlera. I am the youngest member of this podcast. No shade on my older friends. They are wonderful people and mentors, friendtors of mine. I am 100% Guanaco or Salvadoran, Salvadoreño, not Salvadorian. If you say that, you're wrong. I'm sorry. I have been in Georgia since I was 12. I'm the firstborn son of Salvadoran refugees after this, in the middle of the Civil War. I am here because the Reagan amnesty, maybe? I don't know.
Shout out to your Republican president. Right. There you go, Jason.
Yeah. I have plenty of family members that are undocumented, documented, the full spectrum. My break into the political community was when I was 26 years old in the 2012 cycle. I ran as a Republican in Athens, Georgia, blue pocket. I lost the primary because I was not conservative enough. And clearly my independence now speaks volumes. and I caught the eye of our now governor, Brian Kemp. And you can feel very strongly about Brian Kemp, but I consider Brian to have been, and I still like to think of him as a friend. He gave me my break, and I don't think that it can be argued that he never gave a Latino a break or an opportunity in politics. That is it's a fundamental truth that there has been many Latin American Hispanic friends that he's supported. Now, obviously, his policies can be detrimental to a greater audience, but on an individual basis, he did give me my break, among others.
Way to keep it independent.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's really true. So, you know, I went into his office. I worked as a deputy press secretary, business analyst, as a special projects coordinator. At the same time, I was just all over the place.
Sounds like this is a good commercial for 2022.
It's a great commercial, right? But you know, so I've got my bona fides, and after a while, I decided it wasn't comfortable. I started dating a Democratic activist who then replaced Stacey Abrams in the House, which some of you listening may know me from that time of my life, and then helping, you know, the only gay Asian man in the House get elected because, you know, I had to do what my girlfriend told me to at the time, and she was the campaign manager. And since I have been meddling and helping folks on both sides, but really just being the product of the investment of the Latino community in me, and incredibly blessed and fortunate to do so. So, you know, really excited. This is fun for us, and we're looking forward to many more. Joel?
Well, I guess that's the old man of the group. My story goes back eons ago, at least last century. Came out here in 1991. Well, yeah, right. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, if you can't tell from my accent. I'm what you call a New Yorican. Both my parents were born and raised in Puerto Rico, but I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
You guys have a great parade.
We do have a great parade. And let me just tell you, my parents decided early on not to teach me Spanish because they thought it would hinder my education. So I always tell people, the only thing I knew in Spanish growing up was comprame una cerveza en la bodega.
And how old were you when you learned that?
Maybe like 8 or 9.
That's a size beer for anybody who doesn't already know that.
And bodega is a corner store. So we live right next to the corner store. So my dad used to have me go out and get Budweiser for him real quick because he didn't want to miss the game. Anyway, that's too much information.
We might have some Budweiser right here.
We might need to get him as a sponsor. But anyway, so I came down here in 1991 to attend Morehouse College. Graduated from there with a BA in history. Then I got my master's at Clark Atlanta University. I'm currently pursuing my doctorate in higher education administration in the University of Alabama, in my dissertation stage right now. Politics, how I got into it. I started off with Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney in 1999 and never stopped. You know, I've worked in DeKalb County. I've worked for GCAP under Jane Fonda to address adolescent health and teen pregnancy. I had my own company called Power of the Pain, which is a political communications company. I worked for MALDEF as a lobbyist. I worked for the NAACP doing civic engagement during the 2018 election. I've worked in many places in many spaces. Currently now, I work for a minority-owned government relations firm called Ohio River South, located in Atlanta, Georgia, and just love doing the work. Some people love to eat sausage. I like to see it made, and I like to see it, and I also like to eat it too. And I'm hoping
Joel is a sausage lover, to be clear.
Wow. Okay. That's a whole different episode. So anyway, we're going to edit that part out. But I will say this, that we need more people who are Latino engaged in the political process. I mean, they talk about how we're 10% of the population, but we're like barely 1% of the, you know, elected officials. Somebody like Jason is a rarity, right?
Yeah.
Having a Latino who is an elected official at any level of government.
Twice.
Thank you.
He's a twofer.
Oh, there we go. Two-fisting it. Okay.
No, gosh. Sausage man, two-fisting it.
Jeez. Budweiser and Budweiser.
This is going to be a solid edit right here.
Right. It's going to be a lot of editing on this one. But suffice it to say, we know that this podcast can be impactful in that it's important for Georgians who are in politics or aspiring to be in politics or are not political at all. They need to hear a different perspective. And I think we can offer that to them. And matter of fact, our perspective covers the entire political spectrum because we have Jason, who is a conservative and a card-carrying conservative, a true conservative. We have Chris, who is an independent. He has dipped his toe in both political waters and realized that he wants to be an independent, and I'm here for that. And I'm a Democrat. Heck, I I'm the founding chair of the Latino Caucus Democratic Party of Georgia. So I don't know how much more Democratic I can get. And I ran in 2008 in the primary for state house.
We've all run for office. Mm-hmm. I have never won. Mm-hmm. I only ran once. I lost. Jason has run and won. Did you run and lose ever?
Very first time I ran, I lost in 2003.
Okay.
And then came back and got elected to the city council. We've also helped run campaigns, having chaired Senator Marco Rubio's presidential campaign here in Georgia, and helped Jeff Duncan get elected to lieutenant governor. And as Chris should keep on with his commercials about the work Governor Kemp's doing in Georgia. So
I'm not here to give a full endorsement of my old boss, but I think it's important to remember that in this world of politics, there's the people that a candidate and elected official is who they are in the campaign trail, who they are in the policy room, and who they are on one-on-one. No one is a simple, one faceted human being, and it can get real easy to get caught in the weeds. And we'll talk about this more later. This is a great, segue to the fact that we have a lot of interesting things to talk about. Mm-hmm. We don't know what the parental rating on this, so I might start cursing and we might edit it out.
This is a family friendly show.
If we ever get sponsored, I guess I shouldn't curse, but I can always edit this out.
I don't know if we're going to actually be on the Christian Broadcast Network, but maybe Jason could help with that. But I'm not opting for that. I'm more of an NPR guy. But anyway, we can. The thing we do promise to be is honest, and we promise to offer a really thoughtful analysis about the issues of the day. And also, too, it's important for people to realize that we can have conversations about topics that people might not traditionally think as Latino. And for those of you who are listening, I have air quotes up. Just because we're Latino doesn't mean that we're going to talk about issues that are most commonly associated with being Latino. And don't get me wrong, the issues of immigration, issues of in-state tuition and for DACA, critically important. And we're all here for that. All of us, I think we're here supporting our compañeros in their struggles to be accepted and to have the opportunities afforded to them. But at the same time, it's equally important to let people know that Latinos can have a robust conversation about the environment, about the criminal justice system.
Yeah, because there's this misconception, I think, amongst many who are non-Latino, that the Latino community has one viewpoint, one belief. We're all kind of sketched in one mindset.
Monolithic in our thinking.
Yeah. And that's not the case whatsoever.
And I think it's some imagery in your mind, since we're only talking here. Think of immigration as the backdrop to a nature scene, but there's trees and rivers and rocks and that are all in the middle of this scenery. And everyone's always thinking about it. And many of us have family members that are somewhere on the spectrum between undocumented to full citizen. And it's always something to consider. But again, it's always on the top 10 list, but it's very seldom number one.
And let's think about it like this too. Jason is a member of the school board. So obviously something that's passion to him is education, making sure that all children in Paulding County, but also, due to his work, making sure that there's equity and opportunity for Latinos to take advantage of and obtain a quality education that hopefully will prepare them for after they graduate from high school, whether they can either be gainfully employed because they have certain skill sets or they're prepared to enter into to college or university and continue their education.
That's right.
Talk about that.
Yeah, and I think that this platform here, and I think this podcast will show that my beliefs or my friends' beliefs in terms of how do we solve that problem may be dynamically different than maybe how Joel would solve that problem or even maybe Chris. My belief is the school system should, provide less barriers and less roadblocks for kids to get their education. And even something as simple as school safety. Mm-hmm. And in terms of how do we ensure that our buildings are secure and our kids are safe, the whole conversation around whether the Second Amendment and guns and whether teachers should be armed. And I think there's very different viewpoints that Latinos may have on those issues that impact their kids in those environments. So I think there's a wide range of issues between workforce development and other topics that I know we're going to cover going forward after today. But all of those things impact the political scene and maybe who you're going to vote for this year in 2020 and beyond.
Yeah. And again, this isn't the topic of this podcast. We're introducing ourselves to you. Some of you know us very well, and some of you know us from afar. And for any of our, you know, our listeners in the future that have no idea who we are, but they're very curious about the lens of Latino operatives or, you know, people that live and breathe politics, people that immerse themselves in policy and PR as it relates to laws and how they impact our community, there are going to be people that need to know who we are for context. And we appreciate you guys being along for the ride. And we are looking forward to having you guys as guests from your potential vantage points, because this listening party, this first audience, you guys define us, because what you tell us resonates, we absorb, and sometimes we know where it came from. And sometimes it just becomes a part of the fabric of our mind and our being. So, you know, this is going to be a very exciting ride. We're going to, and maybe we can talk about like potential guests. So Joel, do you want to chime in some of the other aspects of the podcast?
I would. I mean, but first, you know, Jason said something that made me think, when you talked about Second Amendment, you know, one of the things I hope we get to talk about is the fact that Latinos being targeted for some of these mass killings.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And I think it's important. So that intersection, I think one of the things that we're going to be dealing a lot with is intersectionality, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that it's not just one thing or another. It's not right. binary, right? It's all mixed up. And so, so like for me, I'm a card carrying Democrat, but I'm not necessarily opposed to the Second Amendment, but I do believe the Second Amendment is not absolute. I believe that there should be some guardrails offered in order to ensure the safety and security of all people. But I'm not the type of person to say, I'm taking your guns away per se. I will say there's maybe certain guns that doesn't need to be out in public. I don't necessarily think people need to be walking around with AR-15s and saying they're going squirrel hunting. But I think that, I am concerned, because when you have people who see Latinos as an enemy of the state, and then they have access to firearms that can do damage, the results are like El Paso, right? And other places. And the name escapes me. There was the church down in South Texas where a person came in, and it was a personal issue, but it was a church filled with Latinos, and he shot up the place, right? And so we just got to be careful in that. What we don't want to do is weaponize people who have certain feelings about Latinos in America and believe us to that we are somehow, we have to prove our Americanness to other people in order to be accepted. I tell people all the time, I'm fourth generation American. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I'm an American. I served this country as a in the Army.
Honestly, and, I didn't even know he was a veteran.
Right. And I have, I wasn't a good one, so I don't tell people all the time. But
but you know, that brings intersectionality again. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to a friend of mine that works with the Veterans Organization. They have a ceremony, an induction ceremony. A fellow named Roger Weiss, very, very well-known guy around the Capitol. Mm-hmm. You guys know Roger?
I don't, but well, I'll take your word for it.
He's been around for a long time. I've known him since I worked for then Secretary Kemp. And he is well-respected, well-connected, got a big ceremony at the Capitol. And he said, he's like, what are you up to, Chris? I was like, well, you know, I'm up to a bunch of stuff, but you know, I'm really proud to represent several of our, you know, Hispanic community pillar organizations. And he said, he likes to call young people big boy. He's like, oh, well, big boy, you need to bring some of these leaders over here. And I was like, you know what? You're right, because we have a lot of Hispanic, Latino, and Latina veterans. And yeah, this would be a good way to show
one of them
that we care. We're here, and we're part of this community, whether right. we speak English at home or in private, in public, or not.
Right. And on top of that, we are Southern. For a long time, you know, the South is really defined by two groups, whites and blacks, right? And to a certain extent, Native Americans, but they were unfortunately forced off their land and moved to other places, but their culture is still intact in certain parts of the region. But you have to acknowledge that there's a third wave. The Latinos are fully integrated in the economy, in the culture, and the civic life of it. So you can have cornbread, or you can have a taco. You can listen to the blues, or you can listen to bachata. But I guarantee you, both of them are equally accessible in the South that we know today.
Yeah, and for people who don't know my story, when my dad came to Atlanta in the late 70s, you know, a decade right after the Civil Rights Act, you know, it was much different than growing up in New York and in Ponce.
Mm-hmm.
And I think him getting adapted, I think, to Atlanta, and then seeing kind of the diversity just explode over the last 30 years to half a century going back to the 70s. Can't believe it's been 50 years since my parents came to Atlanta, or over 50 years. But how much Atlanta has changed, and I think to really see how much the state has changed.
Right.
But I think at the same time, with the diversity, you know, how do we find a place where you and I can disagree on issues, but have this conversation, you know, to hopefully, you know, create some positive awareness, but also
find common ground,
ground where we can get, absolutely, we can get stuff done, but
definitely
without kind of selling out our principles in a way.
Right.
And if it's not clear, we will most definitely have current events as a regularly occurring topic. So once we set up our social media and our email feeds, you know, we rely on our friendships. We're all relationship people. Mm-hmm. That's how we gravitate, I think, into the political arena. And just like that, we're going to rely on you guys, that if, you know, our heads are in the sand or in a hole of policy or an issue that's, you know, bright in our minds, but maybe we miss something, maybe something that's very important. So we'll be looking for that feedback. We'll be looking for those messages, for that engagement.
We definitely want to build community. So, and we're hoping that this podcast can lead to the formation of a community of people. It doesn't have to be like-minded, but people who understand the importance of being engaged politically and sharing information, disseminating information, checking other people, right? Because none of us are going to stand up here and say that we are right all the time just because of our background, a professional background or otherwise. And so we're all humble enough to realize that if we're wrong, or if there is information that we need to be aware of so that we can be on the right side of an issue, we're there for it, because we want, it's a work in progress. But what I wanted to do is that this is a political podcast, and I think it'd be interesting for the listeners to understand why we all got into politics in the first place.
Origin stories.
Yeah, we could have all been anything we wanted to, right? And probably in certain parts of our lives, certain times of our life, we were transitioning to something else, right? But politics keeps pulling us back in. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead and start us off? Why did you get into politics in the first place?
I've practiced the story many a times, usually on a date.
that's what it takes. Wow.
So, I mean, it's a very emotional story of how I ended up in politics. Mm-hmm. We're gonna give summaries, but I think after this listening party kind of structure, we owe it to the audience and audiences out of state and that don't know us, like what made us who we are in the political arena. So for me, I have a cousin who's right between the ages of myself and my brother, who's 26, 27. And he lost his brother. That's just about my age. Ugh, freak heart attack. Young age, like age 21. You know, who has a heart attack age 21? And so he all of a sudden went from just being, you know, a good kid to being the, you know, growing up, like practicing solving Rubik's Cubes to de-stress, became like the president of his fraternity. His girlfriend was the president of her sorority, doing Engineers Without Borders, digging wells, like establishing nonprofits. Tremendous guy. Meanwhile, I'm a few years older than him. I was doing shit. I was going out. I was actually running a pub crawl every Tuesday night for about a year and a half with some friends in Athens, Georgia, the cheapest night of the week to drink. And we were running around with between 20 and 120 people, getting free food while we're buying cheap drinks and just learning the fundamentals of how to form a host committee, and which is something that was really useful in politics. And we went to visit our cousin, shout out Frankie. If you'll probably end up getting hit up by me to listen to this podcast, or Frank, because he's an adult now. And he was doing the most. He was being a tremendous representative and ambassador for the Hispanic community. And my brother and I went, and we were just floored. We were like, wow. He was working at a startup. So you ever seen the Facebook movie, or just like those tech startups with like crazy Lego like sculptures, a whiteboard wall that's like 20 feet tall, and they have a library ladder rolling across, snack wall, computers laying around, iPads laying around everywhere. These people have, you know, the startup phase. They got a lot of money if they're successful. And we just saw that and we said, we could do more, but it's a great topic for future podcasts about seeing yourself in others, in the mentors that we have in politics, technology, and business is fundamental, life-changing. And so that changed my life. We got back after this very fun trip. We got back to Athens. My brother got into tech and design. He's currently just finished closing his $2.5 million B series in his in his startup, seasons.nyc. If you're over there, $159 a month gets you, you know, rent the runway, but for like upscale streetwear. And they're killing it. Alexis Ohanian, co-founder of Reddit, is his principal anchor funder. He's a huge, huge fan, also known as Serena Williams' husband. And, you know, that's what he got out of it. He's rocking it. And I am, you know, slumming it in politics, making a lot less money, but, you know, making a good living. It's harder to develop. And we can talk about that, how to actually get paid to do politics later. But I ended up being a part of a community organization, much like the Latin American Association, but in Athens. And I joined a committee. Then I became the chair of the committee, then due to a special appointment on the board. And then after that, in a special election, I became the chairman of the board. And then I became Athens's like de facto Hispanic community ambassador. Be like, Chris, tell us what you guys are doing. Tell us what you think. Because for a time, we were like almost 20% of Athens until some of the anti-immigrant legislation kicked in and it dropped a little bit. But it's always kind of hard to navigate between undocumented and documented residents. And then I got recruited to run for office. You know, sometimes you do literally get asked to run for office, and we can go into those details later. I ran. I lost. Shout out to Regina Quick, previous state rep, previous judge. She cut me my first check. And she, if you don't know who she is, among many things, she's the LG's general counsel. And she is my madrina, or my political godmother.
What's an LG, Chris?
Lieutenant governor is the, he heads up the Senate.
Okay? He's not a television?
He's not, no, not a television, LG's not a washing machine.
I'm sorry. Oh, my bad. Okay. Just to make that clear for everybody.
Yeah,
because
I mean, we live in this hyper-political world. But, you know, she's been fantastic to me, always been a good friend. And yeah, I ended up in this world as a Republican, and I got trained by the best. I did Republican leadership for Georgia.
Republicans are the best, Chris.
Well, I think that.
Are we getting any static on this microphone? Hold on a second.
People that invest in others are the best. Mm-hmm. Those are solid leaders. And I got the benefit of the full Republican training program. You know, it used to be the Paul Coverdale Leadership Institute. Now it's CPLI, Coverdale Policy Leadership Institute, and Republican Leadership for Georgia. Different focuses. Clearly being part of an alumni of Brian Kemp's, you know, crew of people. Even if I'm not as close as I was back then, I still benefited from understanding how they think, how they work, how they operate. And then moving over into a more comfortable space when Donald Trump, our current president, redefined what it meant to be a Republican. And but that gives you a good taste of my origin story, of how I ended up. It's not everything, but it's a taste. If you didn't know that about me, if you met me while I was dating Representative Nguyen, who is a wonderful human being and a great representative, but yeah, we're still friends. But if you didn't know me before that, that's where I come from, and that's why I know anything about what I'm talking about.
Just let me say this. I hope another topic we can talk about other than past girlfriends is is what does it mean to be Latino in Trump America?
Yeah.
I think we really need to spend some time in that because we all have a perspective. And just the fact that you said you made a political decision based on who was president, that you felt you could not be a Republican, at least how you see what a Republican is with and having and being in the same party as our current president.
Well, to be clear, it was an emotional, mental byproduct. I'll be really candid. You know, my work, like quality and my work ethic was suffering at that time while I was at the Secretary of State. And it wasn't like it wasn't in a critical way. I didn't botch something really big, but I know in retrospect that the culture and the climate really impacted me mentally. And even though I wasn't wise enough to know when to step out, that was most definitely the driving force.
Okay.
Well, and I'll jump in there and, mm-hmm. and say that I think for my story, it's pretty simple. It was my mom. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a foreshadowing of the political environment we're at today, where I watched, you know, this family figure of mine, my mother, fight the government, couldn't get anything done. And it's reminiscent of kind of politics today. And I think the people struggle in terms of the government delivering. And I think the energy that Donald Trump has brought to the table and why he's been successful is because of so many politicians that have promised this or that and not delivering and keeping those promises. And it really was the reason why my mom came to me and said, it's your time to take on the mayor of Doraville, who wasn't doing anything at the time, and fight for our family and our neighbors, because the government wasn't getting their job and they were standing in the way of the average citizen being successful and living out their hopes and dreams. And so my personal story from 2003 feels very much today, I think, how many Americans, whether in Georgia or throughout the South, I think feel the government has been over the last decade, and kind of where we're at today in this very polarized environment that we're in between conservatives and liberals and everybody in between in this country. And I think the sensitivities around that, we want more people who are going to get the job done and deliver, kind of in the sense of what President Trump is doing right now.
Well, I had no desire to be in government or politics or lobbying, anything like that. After I graduated from Morehouse and I started Clark Atlanta, I actually was in a program